Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down. Gonna stand my ground, won't be turned around. And I'll keep this world from dragging me down. Gonna stand my ground.
Good morning, 510 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News, and yeah, we have a really, really not good situation going on in Escambia County right now with elections. And you heard David talking about it. I don't know that we were the first to report it. I'm not sure if we were yesterday, but I know we're among the first to report it, that the supervisor of elections race has changed dramatically. And you now have former commissioner and then appointed supervisor of elections, Robert Bender, who Governor DeSantis picked to fill the vacancy that was created by previously. Of course, you had David Stafford for a long time, supervisor of elections. He took a job with the federal elections folks, and now with CISA. And now Robert Bender has been put in that position. And we know about the issues with John Johnson from having filed late on a Friday in the end of qualifying. And we talked to Robert Bender extensively about this on Monday. And, you know, there were issues that because he filed so late, they were not able to be cured in time, and therefore he got disqualified from the race, whether they could or could not have been cured properly. Or, you know, that's, you know, probably, but it doesn't matter. If you come in at, you know, 10 minutes before the qualifying deadline at noon, it's hard to get anything right that you didn't get right before that. But the problem with the Escambia Supervisor of Elections race, which was Bruce Childers had filed to run against Robert Bender, Pam Childers, clerk of the court and comptroller, her husband and a lawyer, is it's a lot worse than that. So here's the basic what happened. Bruce files all of his paperwork, and then this week, in fact, yesterday is when we kind of all got notice of this, but apparently even on Tuesday is when he had gotten notified that he had not qualified. So he was qualified for 5 days or 5 days. And then all of a sudden, well after the qualifying period had ended, no longer qualified due to discrepancies over the Form 6. Now, it's a whole lot of details, I'm sure, involved in all of this. But basically, the way I kind of understand it is you have to sort of give proof of the Form 6, but even that is kind of, there's a legal interpretation here that is maybe a little open to discussion. So it's not necessarily that he made mistakes in filing the Form 6, even allegedly. It's more like maybe the proof of the filing, you know, because there's just a lot of very detail-oriented checkboxes you have to go through in order to qualify. So none of that really matters much, and I'll tell you why. The details of what did or didn't happen are not really the issue. The issue is the timing, because he didn't file 10 minutes before noon on Friday. He filed on Wednesday. Last Wednesday is when he filed. That means there were a full 2 days during which any potential problems could have been cured, which is why you don't wait till the last minute. Which is why Robert Bender said to us when we talked to him on Monday,
had it come in earlier, and that's why we always
talking about John Johnson.
Had it come in earlier, and that's why we always tell candidates to come in early. You know, if we'd caught it and he'd had time to get it to us before noon,
right?
Then it would have been curable.
Meaning, they tell candidates come in earlier in the week, and then we can cure any problems we have. John Johnson didn't come in early, so they couldn't cure the problems. Bruce Childers did come in early, and they didn't cure the problems. And they didn't tell him that there were problems, and there was no notification that there was a problem. In fact, later on Wednesday, they put it up on the website that he was qualified. So, you know, I'm sure he's sitting at home thinking, oh, good, we're all set. So Wednesday night passes, qualified on the website. Thursday passes, qualified on the website. Friday passes, qualified on the website. Sunday, Saturday, Monday, Tuesday, all of a sudden, not qualified anymore. What? What happened? Well, I asked Robert Bender. I called him. That was my first call yesterday when this news came out. And I said, what happened? And he sent a statement. Mr. Bruce Childers did not qualify as a candidate for the position of supervisor of elections. Mr. Childers' full and public financial disclosure is not provided by close of qualifying. And Florida statute requires a candidate qualifying for constitutional office to provide a copy of the full and public financial disclosure, Form 6. That's the more rigorous one. Versus the Form 1, by the close of qualifying. The requirement is pursuant to the Florida Constitution and Florida's ethics, election ethics laws. The Escambia County Supervisor of Elections Office remains committed to ensuring the integrity of elections and maintaining compliance with the election laws of Florida. So there was something with the Form 6 and boilerplate. And, I had a question about, when did he file? Because that was kind of the issue with John Johnson. And, Robert Bender told me, Wednesday. And, I'm like, well, can I get the public records? He's like, of course, we'll be sending them out, to various people who requested them today. And I just, and I said, is there anything else you can tell me? He's like, I got to go with the statement, which I understand. I mean, he's likely going to be the recipient of a lawsuit over this. He's got to, make sure that he doesn't say anything that's inaccurate. And he's not going to do an interview on the radio until they probably go through the legal process of resolving this, which I would expect will take place pretty quickly because, we got potentially an election to take care of before, you got a primary coming up in 2 months. So first problem is he had at least 2 days to fix whatever happened, right? And in fact, they had people that came through in the, during the course of time and cured some of the problems.
In some of those secondary reviews, people didn't have the right forms, so we would contact them. They had time to fix it, right? Okay. So I know of at least 3 candidates that brought in additional paperwork.
So as the process goes, you do a first review, and then Bender does a second review as the supervisor of elections. If he catches errors, they call him and they work it out, right? Because that's the whole point of the job of the supervisor of elections, to make sure that everybody who wants to run has as best chance to qualify as they can. They're to facilitate democracy, right? So just like for voters, they're supposed to make sure that everybody who wants to vote has as best a chance they can to make their vote happen legally, right? And there are secondary checks that get done by him.
So the process is we receive the paperwork, we do a one check, and then I did most of the second checks. I didn't do anything for anybody that was running against me or anything like that, so I did most of the second checks.
So secondary checks get done by Robert Bender, which makes sense. He's a supervisor of elections. Other staff do the initial check. In this case, it's not clear to me whether there was a second check done or who did the secondary check, but I'll say it this way. It seems logically obvious that somebody did a secondary check because there was a problem found a week later. Was the secondary check done on Wednesday? Was the secondary check done on Tuesday of this week? When was the secondary check and who did it? Well, we don't know at this point. If a secondary check was done on Wednesday or Thursday or Friday and they found the problem and they didn't call Bruce Childers, well, that's a problem. So that seems unlikely. But if they're trying to do secondary checks to make sure that somebody qualifies when they're trying to, there's no point in doing it after the Friday deadline, right? That's why you do a secondary check, to make sure you avoid a problem. So it seems to me, this is all speculation, that the most likely thing is that a secondary check wasn't done in this office because on an ethics basis, Robert Bender wouldn't do the secondary check on his own opponents, although he could, I would think. So maybe a secondary check didn't get done, but then why did one get done later on? How did we discover the problem? Well, we don't know yet. But Robert Bender specifically said he didn't do the secondary check on this particular office. So you put all of this together, and by the way, it doesn't take long to do this. In fact, on Friday, when they were the most busy, Robert Bender told us on Monday,
probably had 5 or 6 candidates in the last hour and a half come through, so we were fairly busy.
Yep.
And so about an hour later, I started the secondary review and noticed that he had submitted a Form 1 instead of a Form 6.
That was for John Johnson. So within an hour, he had begun the secondary review, 1 o'clock on Friday, found a problem. That's where they were working on the John Johnson stuff for the next several hours, right? So doing a secondary review, even on the busiest day of qualifying, still Robert Bender got to it within an hour. Meaning on Wednesday, somebody should have gotten to the secondary review, and this should have been found out pretty early so that Bruce Childers could have cured whatever the problem was, assuming that there was a problem at all. So we're left with a lot of unknowns, and then we're left to interpret the significance of the unknowns. Here's what I expect. I expect Bruce Childers will file a lawsuit and ask a judge on an emergency basis to overturn the decision by Robert Bender's office to disqualify him and say, hey, they'll either show we did everything right and your office screwed up, or they'll say, you know, we did everything right and your office didn't help us qualify the way they're supposed to do their job in the 2 days between when we filed and when Friday happened. One or both of those together would seem to me likely to indicate that the judge is going to rule to put him back on the ballot. So you ask me my opinion in a future news sense of what's going to happen. I think Bruce Childers files a lawsuit. I think the judge puts him back on the ballot. I would expect that to happen pretty quickly. And now we're going to have a two-way contest in the primary. So then you're going to be left with the question of, well, what does this mean for Robert Bender? Well, you have three logical possibilities in all of this. Logical possibility number one, Bruce Childers and his team did something wrong, and the supervisor of elections office did everything right, and he's going to not make the ballot as is appropriate. That strikes me as a pretty low probability. Because it strikes me, since Pam Childers, his wife, is very capable of filing her own stuff for elections, and I'm assuming helping her husband make sure that he files for his first election, it seems unlikely that a mistake was made on their side. I mean, anybody can make a mistake, but that just seems unlikely to me. So possibility number two is they did it right, and in the supervisor of elections office, somebody did something wrong. Or maybe a variety of things wrong. And it might be sins of commission. It might be sins of omission. Not quite sure, but that there's some kind of incompetence within the supervisor of elections office. That's bad. Because you literally have the one job, which is to make sure that candidates get filed properly and help them if they need it. And I guess two jobs, to help people vote and do the machinery of the elections, but we're not there yet. Third possibility is Bruce Childers and his team did everything right. Supervisor of Elections Office is very capable, and you have some malicious actor, you know, deliberately doing this to mess up Bruce Childers, a political opponent of Robert Bender. I think that's incredibly unlikely. But it doesn't really matter. Because if it's malicious, that's a problem for the supervisor of election, Robert Bender. If it's ineptitude, that's a problem. It doesn't as much matter where the source of the problem is. It's that there's a problem, and in basically the first election that he's running as supervisor of elections, the race against him is the one that gets botched up, meaning that he doesn't have an opponent. There's not an informed voter in Escambia County that's not going to at least raise eyebrows at that. And if Bruce Childers does get reinstated at the ballot and people are paying attention, I would think a lot of people will vote for Bruce Childers just on principle. Because if the job is to do this and the job didn't get done, then in his first chance of doing it, Robert Bender botched the job somehow. Well, let's put somebody in who won't botch the job, I imagine. Now, I hate saying this. I hate it. I am really good friends with Robert Bender. I think the man's honorable. I think he's capable. He was one of the best commissioners that we've had. I mean, I thought he did a great job as commissioner. I know there's other people that disagree with me, close friends who disagree with me on this. I thought Robert Bender was an excellent commissioner, and he has been always open, always transparent, always answered my questions, always, you know, this is actually kind of the first time he hasn't answered questions that I had. I kind of understand it. I wish it weren't true, but I kind of understand it. So I hate saying this about a friend. Now, Pam Childers is also a friend. I mean, I get along great with her and him, both of them. Now, they don't get along well with each other, you know, but I'm friends with a lot of people who don't get along with each other. And she also has been very honorable and forthright and clear and, you know, I hate this. So I have to step back and say it doesn't really matter who I'm friends with. It matters what I know about the facts of the case. And it pains me to say it, but unless I get really obvious other evidence come forward, I think the only reasonable interpretation here is that the supervisor of elections office dropped the ball on qualifying a candidate against him, which any candidate for any office, that's a problem because that's democracy. And it's not happening unless a judge intervenes. It doesn't really, for the case, matter so much that it's against him, unless you think he did it on purpose or something like that. And in fact, I'm suspicious that it's him not doing the secondary check that led to this problem somehow. So I don't really think that's right. It's the point of, you know, people who try to qualify the job of the supervisor of elections, get them qualified. That did not happen here. And he came in early, and it didn't happen here. And now he's disqualified after spending like $40,000, you know, on advertising and whatnot. That's a failure to do the job. So like I say, I hate to have to say it about somebody who I really do like, admire, respect, trust. But I don't have any reasonable other conclusion than that at this point. It brings me no joy to say it, but that's a failure to facilitate democracy. That's a pretty big deal. 437-1620, 437-1620. I'm Andrew McKay, and if you are thinking about buying a car, trying to think about whether it is time to buy that next vehicle or not, Frontier Motors is a great place to go do it. They kind of do it differently. Like, they understand that nobody really wants to go through this process. They get that, and they try to make it as easy as possible. I know for us, it was super easy. It was basically drive the car. You want to look at a price? Sure. Can you come down a little bit? Sure. Can we wait a day? Sure. Can we buy the car? You know, can we come down a little bit more on the price? Yes. Can we buy the car? Like, that was it. It was like the easiest car buying experience ever. And they followed up with us afterwards. And they do something cool for you when you buy a car. It's a little thing, but it's a neat thing. I don't want to ruin the surprise for you if you've not bought a car from them. So, I won't go to anybody else. Frontier Motors has got my business for the rest of forever, as far as I'm concerned, because of the way they do business. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years, right behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
We used to argue about whose turn it was to clean the gutters, but then I had Leaf Filter gutter protection installed.
Wait, I told you Leaf Filter had free inspections and estimates and a lifetime guarantee.
Meaning we never have to argue about whose turn it is to clean the gutters again.
But I visited leaffilter.com/beacon first.
No, I did.
It doesn't matter who. Visit leaffilter.com/beacon to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off today.
See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
The Port of Pensacola is more than just a name. It's a powerhouse of economic opportunities, a strategic location that sparks growth and prosperity, contributing significantly to the local and regional economy with 23 incredible businesses that call this port home. Big names like C-Mex Materials, GE Wind Energy, and soon the prestigious American Magic Sailing Team. Since 1754, the Port of Pensacola has been the driving force behind Northwest Florida's economic success. Explore more at portofpensacola.com.
Getting quality employees to fill positions in your company is essential, but finding those people can be a major hassle. Unless you use ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality people a breeze. ZipRecruiter's advanced technology identifies candidates with the right skills, sends you great matches, then you can easily invite them to apply. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See for yourself. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free to try ZipRecruiter for free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Guy Benson, keeping you informed of the news every day at 2, right after Mark Van Camp and Robbins on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
This is my rifle, this is my gun,
this is for fighting, this is for fun.
There are not necessarily a lot of clips you can pull from Full Metal Jacket. some you can more than others, let's just say it that way. 528 here on News Radio Pensacola. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Boy, I hear that song, I just start looking around for Bobby Rossi. Yeah. Where's Bobby? What's going on here?
He don't own that song no more.
U.S. Supreme Court will be issuing
by
more.
By the way, Bobby works with us still. He's the program director. He's a good friend. And, you know, he left because of family circumstances, basically. And so he just couldn't do the shift of that time frame. So go ahead,
David.
We're actually going to the convention together, to the RNC together.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, still see him all the time. I did so long doing the news on his afternoon show, though.
Yeah,
I just remember that song
is
just, yeah, exactly. The Supreme Court will be issuing more opinions today ahead of the end of the month recess. The court has yet to rule on former President Trump's claim that he's immune from prosecution for alleged crimes committed while president. A man accused of killing three people in Oklahoma and one in Alabama has now been arrested. 50-year-old Stacy Lee Drake was apprehended yesterday in Arkansas. He was wanted for the deaths of two people in Gans, Oklahoma, and one in El Reno, Oklahoma, as well as one person in Tuscaloosa County, Alabama. And a trailer has now been released for the new Simone Biles documentary, Simone Biles Rising, a four-part documentary that follows the gold medal gymnast as she sets her sights on the 2024 Paris Olympics.
Outstanding. Sounds interesting. All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 529 here on News Radio Pensacola. What else do we have going on? Is that not enough? the Milltown Duck Race, Blackwater Pirates, great Milltown Duck Race on July 4th. 5,000 rubber ducks dropped in the Blackwater River off the bridge. They race downstream. First place duck wins $1,500, $750 and $250. All kinds of folks involved in this, and you can join us for the fun at the duck races at the base of the Milton Downtown Bridge, 5 o'clock on the 4th of July. Also, the Art Gateway Crab Cake Cook-Off is coming up July 17th from 6 to 8. Always a very, very good time. You can get your tickets or get more information at newsradio923.com. And Bands on the Beach next Tuesday. They're going to have a performance by Vinyl Revival on June 25th at the Gulfside Pavilion at 7 o'clock.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. Former President Trump waiting on a major decision from the U.S. Supreme Court. The opinion could be revealed at 10 a.m. Eastern. The ruling from the justices could decide whether the former president is immune from criminal prosecution in his election interference case. The month of May means a money haul for Donald Trump.
These are some eye-popping figures. The Biden team raised $85 million. In any other year, that would be a staggering number. But the Trump camp pulled in a whopping $141 million.
That is Fox's Doug Luzader reporting this morning. Israel sets up a pathway for the delivery of aid into southern Gaza, but its declared tactical pause in the war with Hamas has not brought much relief to Palestinians who desperately need help. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio Pensacola. I'm David Wayne. Right now we've got partly cloudy skies at 74 degrees in Pensacola. Governor Ron DeSantis yesterday signing a couple of bills to help veterans across the state. One of those, House Bill 725, which expands the eligibility for admissions to veterans' long-term care facilities.
To include spouses and surviving spouses of qualifying veterans.
And DeSantis also signed House Bill 1329 that revises existing programs and expands benefits to help veterans transition into civilian life. It requires middle and high school students to get history lessons on Veterans and Memorial Day, and it also gives free hunting and fishing licenses to all disabled vets. When the Santa Rosa County Board of Commissioners meet next week, they'll be taking up a resolution that could become controversial.
Millions of illegal immigrants are invading our country, and it's having an effect on the citizens of Santa Rosa County. What this resolution will do will send a message saying that illegal aliens are not welcome in Santa Rosa County.
Commissioner James Calkins telling Channel 3 that it's not just a political statement, but a response to incidents that have been reported around the county. He says he's received reports of car accidents and crimes being committed by illegal immigrants. The commissioners are expected to discuss and possibly vote on that resolution next week. Another high-profile race in Escambia County being won unopposed. News Radio's Joe Ford with more.
Yeah, yesterday it was announced that Bruce Childers didn't qualify to run against Escambia Supervisor of Elections Robert Bender. According to Bender's own office, Childers' full and public financial disclosure, also known as the Form 6, was not provided in time for the qualifying deadline. Childers, the husband of Escambia County Clerk of Court Pam Childers, according to EscambiaVotes.com, Childers had spent $42,000 this month, the vast majority of it in political advertising. A total of $100,000 in campaign funds was a loan from himself. Joe Ford, News Radio Pensacola.
Thank you very much, Joe. And a 22-year-old man dead after a drive-by shooting yesterday in Pensacola. Police say that happened at West Gonzalez and North M Streets.
Four or five shots. And I'm like, wow, them gunshots. And a few minutes later, we had like five, six more. We don't have that problem. Not over in this area, we don't have that problem. I mean, it's been, I haven't even heard of anybody getting shot in this area. This is like the first.
That from somebody that lives over near that scene. They talked with Channel 3. A PPD spokesman, Mike Wood, says this shooting has not yet been connected to a string of ambush-style shootings that have taken place around Escambia County in recent months, although Wood says the investigation is still very young. The victim did die shortly after this shooting at a local hospital. He was identified as Terrell Omar Owens. If you have any information, contact PPD, or you can call Crime Stoppers if you want to stay anonymous. It is 5:35. Your next news at 6. We have breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio, Pensacola.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Netflix has announced two new brick-and-mortar stores slated to open in 2025. The immersive experiences are set to debut in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, and Dallas, Texas. The locations will feature a wide array of shopping outlets, eateries, and experiential activities tied to the streamer's major franchises like Bridgerton, Stranger Things, and Squid Game. As of now, these stores will not be permanent, but instead will be used as a marketing vehicle to invite fan engagement and encourage subscriptions. This Tuesday, McDonald's will be launching its new $5 meal deal, which has seemed to spark a price war among its fast food rivals. The meal includes a McChicken or McDouble, four-piece chicken McNugget, a side of fries, and a drink. In response, Burger King has pledged to roll out its own $5 value meal, and Starbucks has announced a $6 breakfast sandwich and coffee combo. Futures are slightly lower. That's Your Money Now.
Whether you want to start your education or advance your career, Pensacola State College is the place for you. Join the 92% of Pensacola State College students who graduate loan-free and select from over 100 programs, ranging from career certificates to baccalaureate degrees. In addition, Pensacola State has over 300 scholarships to choose from, including cybersecurity. Registration for the summer and fall semester is now open. Go to PensacolaState.edu. That's PensacolaState.edu. Go here.
Visit Prim and Proper, the premier destination for unique gifts in Gulf Breeze, specializing in adding that extra touch of thoughtfulness to any occasion with expert engraving services. From elegant monograms to heartfelt messages, they bring visions to life. With a wide selection of gifts for birthdays, anniversaries, weddings, and more, there's something perfect for everyone. Prim and Proper also excels in corporate, employee, and client gifts that leave lasting impressions. Visit them online at primandproper.com.
Ready for intelligent and thought-provoking conversation? Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola. Weekdays from 2 till 4 p.m. on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Guy Benson, the brilliant and charismatic host, brings you a fresh perspective on the biggest stories of the day. Guy keeps you engaged and informed. Don't miss out on the intellectual thrill ride. Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola from 2 till 4 p.m. It's the show that'll challenge your thinking and leave you wanting more. On News Radio Pensacola.
Good morning, 5:37 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's a Pensacola Morning News. Yesterday, I had a chance to talk to Mike Wood from the Pensacola Police Department. Obviously, we've had a major development since we talked to him, not about anything we discussed, but we did have a drive-by shooting yesterday in the city in which somebody died, and they're looking for the people connected, as you heard David Wayne talking about that just now. So we didn't have a chance to talk about that yesterday with Mike, but we did discuss some other matters. Mike Wood, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning. So I think it was a relatively light week from a sort of newsworthy law enforcement perspective at PPD, but you did have earlier in the week, you had a SWAT call out, right, to somebody inside a home?
Yeah, it was over on Bowling Place Sunday night into Monday morning. Sunday night, about 11:32, we received a call of a disturbance there. Once officers got there, they had information that the individual inside was armed. There was an adult female inside and also several children, turned out to be nine small children. And they tried throughout the night to get him to come out of the house, and he refused to do so. So eventually our SWAT team and negotiations team were dispatched to the scene. And once they got there, it took a little bit less than 5 minutes for this man to decide to surrender peacefully. And that's what happened. And thankfully, there were no injuries.
So they didn't have to go in. He came out voluntarily. And was he armed?
I don't believe they found or saw a weapon
during
this, but it passed. We've been there before, so you have to use intelligence from prior calls.
Okay.
And I believe the third hand information that we got that notified us of the disturbance did indicate that he had a weapon inside.
Okay. And you said 9 kids in the home, so this could have been a completely different outcome.
Yeah, this is something that, you know, we have to approach very carefully, and that's what happened. We in a situation like that, you don't get in a hurry. That's why we were there from 11:30 till 5 a.m. Because there's no need to get in a hurry, and you have to do things the right way, because anything could go wrong, and with 9 children in the house, it could have been horrific. But the officers on scene, the patrol officers on scene, did a fantastic job with that. And then, like I said, once the negotiators and SWAT got on scene, the individual surrendered without incident. So that's how we want to see it turn out.
And that's one of the things, I know you and I have talked about this many times, and same with the sheriffs, but it still bears repeating, because people have a picture of SWAT as the Rambos of the police world that are there to go in and, you know, kick in doors and shoot bad guys and incapacitate people. But SWAT is a life-saving mission first, foremost, and always, and these negotiations can take hours and hours because you're trying to avoid the use of force, which always puts everybody at risk, right?
Yeah, and that's a myth, and that's something we could talk about on a cop myth sometime and go further into it. That's not what they want at all. They don't want to go in their guns a-blazing. They want it peaceful. And, in fact, in this history of the SWAT team of the Pensacola Police Department, only 1 shot has ever been fired. So
wait, what?
They want an outcome.
Wait, say that again, because I bet people don't know that. Say that again.
In the history of the Pensacola Police Department SWAT team, only 1 shot has been fired. And that was a shot that was being returned. So that officer was fired upon first. So there's not a lot of SWAT teams in this country or in the world that are able to say that, but we can.
Wow. I think I might have known that from before, but it just still, that strikes me as, I mean, great. You know, like, that's impressive. That's a very, very good thing. So, you know, only because I've been kind of going through this, you know, this training a little bit. I mean, a little tiny taste of the training at Scambia County Sheriff's Office facility. The SWAT team, I mean, did they have to do anything else in the house, like, I mean, afterwards, or was there any follow-on? And, you know, I mean, because you never know if it might be just the one guy, right? You never know for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So once the house was cleared, the SWAT team did go in. Once the individuals came out, the SWAT team did go in and clear the house to make sure there weren't anybody in there or any other suspects, and especially people that may be injured inside. So once everybody comes out, it's not over with until the SWAT team clears the house.
Okay. I just think a lot of times you kind of think that, you know, we got there, they came out, it's all over, but you just never know, and you have to make sure that everything is safe for the family or anybody else, right? That makes perfect sense.
Exactly.
You kind of mentioned that you'd been to this house before. There was a story out of, gosh, I want to say it was Hillsborough County is what I have in my head, elsewhere in Florida, where there was a 19-year-old, I think, son, an adult teenage son, out on that had been having a dispute with the mom. They wind up out on the lawn. The cops had come, and when the cops arrived, he shot his mom, I don't think fatally, based on the story, and also shot one of the police officers who was responding, and then he was taken into custody. The part of the story that caught my attention was that they said they had been there 10 times previously, and for varying kinds of, like, Baker Act or domestics or all this kind of stuff. And so it made me want to ask you the question of, you know, because what I think is, it sounds like they did not have the resources available to properly handle this potential threat. They felt like there was nothing they could do, or there was nothing legally that they could do. And so I want to ask you, you know, we have a lot of legislators listening to this show. As a police officer, do you guys have the tools and resources you need to handle those kinds of citizens who will eventually be a risk to themselves or others when you respond?
Well, we go through extensive training from day one. We receive training throughout our careers for mental health issues. But Andrew, at the end of the day, when a person becomes violent, it doesn't really have an effect upon what we do or the tactics that we use in order to neutralize that situation. We can't worry about if somebody, are they just angry? Are they fighting mental health issues? Are they on heavy narcotics? We have to take care of a violent situation immediately. So we have to respond with whatever we are being met with by that individual person. Now, if the person is not violent, then, and we understand that it may be narcotics or a mental health issue, then we approach it that way and try to diffuse the situation. But once it gets violent, then all bets are off. We have to do our jobs to protect the people that are in that area and to protect our officers.
Kind of a follow-up on that. I guess the what I perceive is this problem. At the very back end, we have people who you actually send through the criminal justice process, and then they get convicted, and then they get let out or diverted or quick terms, and then that's frustrating because these people who are just these repeat offenders, the revolving door at the jail. And then on the front end, it feels like you've got people that the police certainly know are a problem, but especially if they are, you know, mental issues or drug-related issues, but they're not violent yet, that you have your kind of like your hands are tied basically in how you deal with them, even though you get there for the 11th time and they shot somebody and you're like, well, we knew this was coming. That's kind of what I'm getting at. Do you feel like there's any more that could be done to make it possible to prevent that problem?
You know, at this point, I don't think so, Andrew, because
okay.
Having serious mental health issues is not a crime.
Right.
And you can't lock people up because of that. So it's a fine line there, and that's something that has been debated for years and will continue to be debated. You know, even though we might see a situation coming, you know, you can't just lock somebody up for something that you see coming. So,
yeah.
You know, especially when they're fighting mental health issues. So we understand that. We get that. And but unfortunately, that's the world we live in right now. That's how we're going to have to deal with that one step at a time. And, you know, you only see the ones that you hear about that end up going bad. But there are a lot of them that seek treatment that do get better that we don't have issues with anymore.
Very good. Of course, it's been in the news lately that Cassie's law got signed by the governor. So, you know, the provision of safe exchange places for people doing custody, which is, of course, always a little bit of a thing because, you know, people don't get along. But, of course, with Cassie Carley, it turned out to be this horrific thing. PPD, I assume the safe exchange place is going to be at headquarters on Haines Street?
Yes, our parking lot is a safe exchange location.
All right, very good. Which is also, in case people forget, if you're doing a transaction for Facebook or something like that, you can, same thing, right?
Yeah, Facebook Marketplace, you feel free to come use our parking lot. You know, if it's like child exchange or something like that, where there could be a little bit more risk, we will have an officer out there to meet you at the parking lot to be there for that.
Very good. We always like to end with a cop myth or a did you know. Did you have one for me this week?
Yeah, I do. But before I get to that, let me back up to this the situation we had Sunday night. I want to be sure and thank Sheriff Simmons and the Sheriff's Department for providing their Bearcat to us. They've been able to do that whenever we've needed it, the Bearcat and the personnel. They did that once again Sunday, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, I actually meant to ask you about that. I'm glad you reminded me. Where are we at on getting ours?
We're still, you know, it's like, you know what it's like to order a fire truck. We're still, because we have specific, we have specific things we need that vehicle to do and options that we have on it. And, you know, unfortunately, you can't just run down to Bob's Bearcat Bonanza and pick one off the lot. You have to order those things, and it takes time for them to come in. So that's where we're at. But I'm sure once it gets here, we're going to let you know, and we're going to make a pretty big deal out of it.
My news guys are upset at me for laughing at your good joke. Bob's Bearcat Bonanza. I ruined the sound clip, but, you know, it happens. That was a great line. All right. Do you have a – I'm sorry. That was so good. Do you have a cop myth for me this week?
Yeah, it's not really a myth. It's a safety thing that we're seeing on these newer vehicles at night. If you get pulled over by the police and they said you didn't have your lights on and you're looking at the dash and it's all lit up and you're wondering why we said that, if these vehicles, if you look at your light switch and you'll see a circle with a slash at the top, and if the setting is on that, that is the problem. So when you turn the vehicle on, you're going to have daytime running lights, so it's going to look like to you have your headlights on. Your dashboard is going to be lit up, so it's going to look like you have your headlights on, but there's nothing in the back. There's no taillights. and that's why you're being pulled over. So that switch needs to be set on auto. Most of them will have the word auto there. Just make sure the switch is there, and you shouldn't have to worry about it anymore. It should light up on its own all the way around the car as soon as you start it at night.
Very interesting. And I have seen many times that thing where people have their running lights only and they have no taillights, and the running lights are so bright that, you know, you can mistakenly think your headlights are on. And like you said, the dash is lit up too. So very good safety tip. Mike Wood is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, as always, thank you for the time, helping us understand what's going on in the world and keeping us safe. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
All right. 7:50. Absolutely. 5:50 here on, or sorry, 5:49 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. And if you've got a home improvement project, a repair, something that you just want to do better in your house, a remodel, or maybe you're a professional builder, you know, you build houses for a living, go to Pensacola Hardware. Look, especially if you're on like the pro end of the scale, you know, you might have your place you go. I understand that. But have you been to Pensacola Hardware? Have you talked with them? Have you asked them how they can help you? Because I'll give you just some real simple examples. They can take it to your job site. You know, you don't have to go to them. You just call them and say, here's what we need, and they'll bring it to you. That saves you time, right? Then you don't have to send, you know, Jimmy down with a credit card. You know, they can bring it to you, and they can put you on a monthly billing, so you don't even have to do the credit card thing. You know, if you go to your place right now and you ask them for something and they don't have it, what do? They order it, and you wait a day or two to get it in, right? If you go to Pensacola Hardware and you ask them if they have it and they don't have it, it won't happen. I'm just telling you, that won't happen. They have it. If you need it, they'll have it. And if they don't have it, you actually don't need it. They'll have a better thing, the appropriate thing for you, because they've been doing this since 1851. They know what you're going to need. Trust me, they know. And they will know how to install it. They'll know how to solve the problem. They'll probably know the code and the inspectors and everything, because that's their bread and butter, is helping people like you build things. They've been doing it for over 173 years. Pensacola Hardware, right downtown at 20 East Gregory Street.
Why is Bray Jewelers the best place to buy an engagement ring? Come in and see our selection. I promise you, we have more diamond engagement rings than you'll see anywhere in the panhandle of Florida. But it's what you do for people that they don't expect that they remember. The little things that we do, we want to deliver special experiences for you at Bray. We love doing what we do, and we love making people happy. We want every person that walks into the store to feel like you're part of our family. I want everybody to have an amazing experience at Bray Jewelers.
Party down with a big bang. Shelton Fireworks has been in business for over 40 years. Located on I-10, exit 53, the first Alabama exit, Robertsdale, Alabama. Shelton's has the world's largest selection with over 35,000 square feet of fireworks, the largest vanilla cakes, and the largest mortars legal in the USA. If it goes boom, Shelton's has got it. Located on I-10, exit 53, the first Alabama exit, Robertsdale, Alabama. For more info, go to sheltonfireworks.com, home of the big ones.
How long could your business function without email? I'm Nathan with Data Revolution, and this is your cybersecurity tip of the month. Three Gulf Coast businesses had their email shut down for 2 days because one employee clicked a spam email link. Be suspicious of any unsolicited email offers, especially if they are too good to be true. Businesses on the Gulf Coast trust Data Revolution for their cybersecurity and communications needs. Visit datarevs.com for more information.
Wrap up your day with all of the national, state, local sports and entertainment news with Pensacola right now with Joe and Austin on News Radio 92.3.
Are you the Keymaster?
Good morning. 5:52 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's a Pensacola morning news. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
Well, the heat wave lingering over the Northeast is expected to peak this weekend with high temperatures in the 90s across much of the Northeast and the Midwest. Yesterday, a lot of daily heat records were broken in at least 20 different cities. President Biden and Donald Trump now preparing for next week's presidential debate. Biden's been training with his advisors in Camp David. Trump has been holding policy discussions with allies and also with some vice presidential hopefuls. That debate will be on CNN on June 27th. And the Hezbollah terrorist group has been ramping up attacks against Israel. State Department spokesman Matthew Miller tells reporters that the Lebanon-based group has been targeting civilian infrastructure inside of Israel, and the U.S. is concerned that conflict could potentially be escalating.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 5:53 here on News Radio Pensacola. Donald Sutherland passed away. Talk about a man. Like, how many movies? And, of course, Kiefer Sutherland's father. And, man, just unbelievable, prolific acting career, playing every role you could possibly imagine. John, do you have a Donald Sutherland played this role as your Donald Sutherland role for you?
I was thinking about Hunger Games to MASH to
everything, right?
Yeah, and it's hard to pick because I loved his acting style.
Right, and you think of him as just everything.
Everything, you're right. Right, yeah.
I think of him, you know, particularly as the guy who was involved in the crime capers or the spy world kind of stuff is how I think of him. But you know what? I was thinking about this. Like, what is my one thing that I think of him for? Because young people think of him for Hunger Games, right?
Right.
But for me, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the remake. At the end, when he raises his hand and it turns out that he's one of the, you know.
Yes.
That's my one. That's my, like, I don't, you know, in all of his grand acting career, that's the one that sticks out to me. Right. But at the same time, think about it. Anybody who's seen that movie knows that scene, and even you did it while I was saying it to you. Yeah. When he raised his hand, you're like, you know, you know the sound. Yep. I mean, that's a great scene, right? The remake itself was not particularly great. The original's better, but that one part of that movie was fantastic. So a great career, making all of our lives richer through art, which is, you know, I know movies and TV get kind of poo-pooed a lot by the cultural elites or even by, you know, commentators. People like me even, you know, tend to look at. But sometimes I forget who gave me this perspective, so I'd give them credit if I could. But years ago, somebody gave me the insight that TV and movies are one of the greatest forces for artistic liberation that have ever been invented. Because think about what happened before you had TV.
Right.
You had to go to the theater.
Yes.
And who goes to the theater? People who are wealthy, who can afford the leisure time and the leisure disposable income to go to the theater, right? Patrons of the arts are typically wealthy. And so in order to have any entertainment, so to speak, you'd have to go to the theater. Well, when movies came out, all of a sudden you could afford to go to the theater. And you could get all kinds of entertainment provided to you, you know, which could provoke you or make you laugh or cry or whatever. And then TV is just an extension of that same thing. And the way this was presented to me was the idea that, you know, TV and movies are really mostly of benefit to poor people. Because, again, think about it. Who can go to the movies? It's the rich people. They don't get, I mean, they had arts before. They'll have arts after. Mm-hmm. People who didn't have access to any kind of artistic performance, not really, not much, were poor people. All of a sudden, they have movies and TV, and they get experience with art. So, now, that, of course, doesn't justify a whole lot of content that does get produced, but the basic concept of it is widespread, public, inexpensive access to artistic performance. That's a pretty good thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's typically, that's a very good thing. 4-3-7-16-20 we've got some news notes in about military matters. One is that the recruiting problems that we're having in the military, you know, with some branches having more and some branches having less, apparently are all about not being able to recruit men. Like, women recruiting is level. But since 2013, male enlistment has dropped 35%.
Wow.
This is specifically for the Army, down from 58,000 in 2013 to 37,700 in 2023. Female recruitment has hovered right around 10,000 every year, so that's been very, very common. Soldiers had to come up short of its goal in last year. In 2022, it missed a goal of 60,000 by 15,000. This year, the service reduced its goal, seeking 55,000. It looks like they're going to get pretty close to hitting it. So, you know, you can either get more recruits or you can reduce your goal. Either way, why are men not signing up for the military? Combination of factors. One widespread that critics will raise, and I think it's not unfair to say, is that the military is perceived as becoming woke or emasculated or feminine, any combination of these things, whether it's from pride endorsement, you know, like we saw with the SEALs.
Right.
I mean, that's just mind-boggling, but okay, there it is. But also a broader problem with men disengaging from American society. Less likely to enroll and graduate from college, more likely to die from drug overdose or suicide, and going away from the general workplace for a variety of factors, But that's just kind of a general trend that we're seeing with men, which, by the way, is very, very bad for a culture. When you see men check out, that's bad. Yeah. That's really, really bad. Ronald Levon, a professor of psychology at the University of Akron, former president of the American Psychological Association, says to military.com, it goes way beyond military recruitment. It really has to do with social change. I think there's an amotivational syndrome that seems to permeate a lot of young men today. They're just not motivated to do very much. I'm consider things like, and I mean, this will take a long time to elaborate, but, you know, think about how young boys do what these days more than anything else. They play video games.
You're right.
And they look at porn. I mean, looking at porn is nothing new, but, you know, it used to be you kind of had to go out of your way to get it. Now, you know, the flood is available anytime you want, right? 5,000 different women eager to, you know, fake stimulate you and whatever. Okay, so historically, why do men work? Why do men play sports? Why do men? Because they don't have other outlets for their aggressive and/or sexual tendencies. Well, now you play video games and look at porn online instead. So men don't have to engage in the constructive pursuits that historically culture has, you know, gotten them into instead of. Now they're just into the instead of, and they're not doing all the other good stuff.
Local Talk in the Morning, 5 to 9 with Andrew McKay is on News Radio 92.3. WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.
Pensacola police are investigating a fatal drive-by.